Hey, welcome to Bannocks, Bonnets, and Kilts, Outlander fans. I am your host, Jenny Coco Cure. And in this week's episode of Bannocks, Bonnets, and Kilts, we're going to be recapping Outlander Season 3, Episode 12, entitled The Bacra. This episode was written or directed by Charlotte Branstrom, and it was written by Luke Shellhaz, and it aired on December 3rd, 2017. I know I'm a little late with this episode, but you'll have to forgive me. I did record this originally, like I told you in my show note, on Sunday evening or Sunday morning, really. But there was just so much noise in that episode, and it's just so many problems with it. I decided to just do a re-record, and this is going to be a quick recap too. It's not going to be the lengthy minute-by-minute recap as I usually do. I'm doing this from memory too, so if I get anything wrong, if I miss anything, well, I'm going to miss some stuff. But if I get anything wrong or say anybody's name wrong, like I did last week when I said that the person that Claire was helping with Archibald Campbell and Margaret Campbell, I mistook Margaret Campbell and I called her Mary McNabb. So forgive that error from last week. I think it was last week's episode where I referred to Margaret Campbell as Mary McNabb. That was a pretty glaring error. So if I have any errors this week in this quick recap that I'm doing based on my memory, which is kind of, you know, iffy, then just shoot me an email at jennycococure@yahoo.com and correct me, and I'll read it on next week's episode. Make sure it's a nice email now. Don't be all nasty. But jennycococure@yahoo.com is my email address. Just shoot me an email if I get anything wrong, or if you want to just say anything about the show, I'll always know that you can do that at jennycococure@yahoo.com. Make sure it's a nice email, though, because I'm not reading any nasty stuff. Okay. This week's episode starts with the title card of some feminine hands going through the treasure chest. The treasure chest that Ian had found on the island, and then the pirates took from him, and then they kidnapped him. So we see some feminine hands going through the box, searching through the jewels, finds one blue stone, a sapphire stone, finds a second sapphire stone, and then searches feverishly through the rest of the jewels for another stone, could not find it apparently, and so swipes the box, the whole jewelry box, off the table. So apparently someone was very upset that they could not find a third stone in the treasure box, sapphire stone. And then we start the episode with a cold open. Okay, I'm sorry. That title card did not come until later. We first start the episode with the cold open. The cold open is of Ian being taken onto the pirate ship by the pirates that kidnapped him from Silky Island. We can hear Jamie and Claire in the background yelling, Ian, or Jamie's yelling, Ian, and Claire is Jamie yelling after Jamie so that he doesn't, you know, do something silly like trying to swim with the arm that he had just been shot in. And Ian is trying to get away from these pirates, but they have him. He's not going anywhere. They take the treasure from him. One of the pirates checks to make sure that everything's there, according to what he believes it is all there. They speak of this person called the Bacra, and that this is what they were expecting. The Bacra was expecting this this treasure, and they believe that everything is there for him. They discuss what to do with Ian. At first, they talk about maybe feeding him to the pigs, but then they decide, no, we'll keep him because the Bacra likes young boys. So they take Ian and put him away. They sail to Jamaica. Once they get to the dock of Jamaica, or the port of Jamaica, and they arrive, I think, at this place where the Bacra is, they put Ian in a pit, in a cell. They throw him inside, and while Ian is in this cell, he hears someone ask him what his name is, and he's startled by that. He looks over into the shadows and sees this other teenage boy, a white teenage boy, and then he sees another black boy as well, who might be a little bit younger. The boy tells him his name is Henry, and that when he arrived, there were six other boys, including the black boy that he was with, Abiku. And he says he thought that they were in Jamaica because one of the boys who had been there previously by the name of Robbie had told him that. And but he said Robbie and all the other boys are gone now. And Ian asks him, what do you mean they're gone? Where'd they go? And then Henry tells him that they see the Bakra and then they never return. And Ian looks at them and he's like, what's a Bakra? And then we switch to the next scene where Ian is being taken by this large black house, I guess, person. I was going to say another word. I'm glad I didn't say it. But anyway, he's a house man, a house servant, and he's large slave, and he is taken in to this this part of the house, and it's a bedroom. He sits Ian on the bed, tells him to stay there, and he leaves. And while Ian is sitting on this bed, all of a sudden we see come into the shot this leg that just kind of appears. And it is slick and covered with thick blood. And the toe is pointed and it's obviously a feminine leg, like I said. And then you hear a voice and the voice says, they say you're from Scotland. So am I. And we know immediately when we hear the voice, if you've watched Outlander since season one, that that's the voice of a very familiar character. Then we see this person get out of the pool. Her back is turned. She looks over her shoulder. Her body is slick with blood. She's obviously gotten out of a pool of blood. And she looks over her shoulder and we see her face. And even though her hair is grayed, her face still looks as young as ever. It is Gaylis Duncan from season one. Ian asks, are you the Bakra? And she says, I am. But you can call me Gaylis. So she goes over to these pots of clear water to rinse the blood off. She pours it over her body. Ian is watching. He's very fearful, you can tell, but probably also aroused because she is a young-ish looking woman, even though she's probably Claire's age now in her late 40s, mid to late 40s. She's pouring this water, rinsing the blood off of her. Her body still looks great. I like the way that they handle this, by the way. It's very different from the book. In the book, she looks quite different in her older years. But they decided to keep her looking young and fit. She tells Ian, don't worry about the blood. It's only goat's blood. But come on. We know. That's... Nah. No. When Henry told Ian all the boys never came back. Yeah. Come on. We know. We know whose blood that is. So anyway, she's rinsing the blood off, and then she says that she uses the blood or swims in the blood because of the irons and proteins keeping her skin young. Well, it's working like a charm because she looks fabulous. So anyway, she puts a robe on after she rinses all the blood off. Her manservant comes back in, the large black man, with some food. He puts a tray down and then leaves again. And Gaylis offers Ian some food. At first he refuses, but she said, come on, you know, eat. It's only cake and pudding. Of course, something a young man would love. she's a pedophile, you know. That's what they do. They give the kids the candies and treats, right? You know, so whatever. Oh God. Anyway, so Ian at first tries to ignore the food. He doesn't want to eat it, but he's starving. So he just starts to just dig in. She pours him some tea. He drinks that. At first, he doesn't like it. He makes a face. She adds sugar to it. She said it tastes better with sugar. So he drinks some more. Then she says, you know, they say they found you on Silky Island with my treasure. She says, and I noticed when I opened my treasure that one of the sapphires was missing. I expected three, but there was only two. Did you take the other one? And Ian was like, I didn't even have a chance to open it. What are you talking about? So she says, that cake is dry. Here, have some more tea. So she offers him some more tea. And he drinks it, you know. Since she added the sugar, it tastes better. So she's like, okay, so are you sure you didn't take my stone? He's like, I told you I didn't take it. So then she gets frustrated, you know. And then he has this look on his face like he's thinking. And she's like, what are you thinking? He's like, well, maybe it was my uncle who took it. And he covers his mouth like he didn't mean to say that. And she's like, what uncle? He's like, James Fraser of Brock Tour. And he can't help saying these things, even though he's not wanting to. She's like, yeah, it's the tea that I gave you that's making you say this stuff. It makes you tell the truth, even if you don't want to. A witch doctor gave me, helped me learn how to make it or whatever. So then she says, and she knows, of course, who James Fraser is. She's familiar with him from when she knew Claire and James back when they were in Craigsmere. So anyway, or wherever the hell they were. But anyway, she's like, what does he want with my treasure? And Ian says to pay a debt. You know, he needs it for that. So she's like, well, where is he now? And he says, well, he's on his way to come get me. I know that. And she's like, well, I hope so, because maybe he'll bring my stone with him. So then she decides to, you know, slither all over him and stuff, and rubbing her feet and stuff all over him and everything. And then Ian asks her, what happens to the boys that you take out of the pit? She says, well, I have my way with them. But then, you know, she says, virgins are so powerful inside, you know. She says, but after that, I don't have any use for them. And then she pulls Ian close to her and she's like, come, it's really not such a bad way to go. And Ian looks at her and he's like, I'm not a virgin. And she's like, oh, okay. And she opens her robe up and shows him her body. And then she says, well, at least you'll know what to do. So that is the cold open. And then we go to the title card with the jury box scene that I already described. Then in the first scene of the episode, past that, we have, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, Claire, Jamie, Fergus, and Marcelly, they have arrived on the Artemis at the port of Jamaica. Fergus, Jamie, Claire, and Marcelly get together, discuss what they're going to do. They discuss that Captain Leonard might be there and they need to avoid him from the porpoise because they know that he's looking for Jamie. But Jamie says, well, he's got too much to do. He's got to get a new crew. He's got to, you know, get new provisions. So it's going to take him a while to get here. He says, that'll give us time to look for Ian and then sneak away before he even gets here. So Marcelly and Fergus go one way. Claire and Jamie go another. Claire suggests that she and Jamie split up because they can look better or be more productive. And Jamie's like, no, I'm not letting go of you again. You'll stay with me. So they stick together and they run into this gentleman who asked them if they had just come off the Artemis. And they look at him suspiciously and Jamie's like, well, who are you? And he's like, I forgot what he said his name was. But he says that the Artemis is my employer's vessel. And Jamie's like, oh, well, I am your employer's cousin. My name is James Fraser. This is my wife, Claire. I'm a supercargo. We've brought you some wine and brandy. And the man says, oh, great. I wasn't expecting any goods until summer. And this will come in handy because I needed some wine for the governor's party that he's throwing tonight. And if you guys want to go, you can come. My wife would love to meet some of Jared's kin. And Claire was like, no, we've got other pressing matters to tend to while we're here. And the man said, oh, well, can I be of any service with that? And Jamie says, yes, you can. We need some lodgings, and I'll tell you the rest while we walk. So they walk along, and I guess Claire and Jamie tell them the whole story. And then the man says, oh, well, that's so scary that happened to your nephew. He says, I did see the Bruja, which is the Portuguese ship that kidnapped Ian. It was here. But then it did something and then left about a day later. That was about a week ago. And I think Jamie asked if he had if they had had any slaves on the ship. And the man said he didn't know. But he could find that Jamie could find out by going to the slaves market and inquiring there. So, Claire and Jamie get to the slaves market a little later. And this is a really kind of depressing scene at the slaves market where Claire and Jamie are inquiring with different people, trying to find out information about young Ian. And they're going from slave trader to slave trader. And each one of them is trying to get them to look at their slaves. Look at our slaves. We got great Negroes from the Gold Coast and all this stuff. It's terrible. Of course, Claire is particularly disturbed, being a 20th century person, seeing this and seeing these people in cages. And it's just terrible. Let's see. Jamie is asking, you know, questions as he's going along. And he comes across one slave trader, and the slave trader tells him that he doesn't deal, because Jamie's asking about his nephew Ian. He says, an indentured servant. And the man was like, what do you think, I'm some sort of beast? He says, I only deal with Negroes, savages. You know, I don't do white people. So anyway, Jamie's like, okay, do you know anyone who does? And then the man says something about the governor buying some slaves from the bourgeois, and that they being subpar compared to the slaves that he had. And then his interest was piqued at that. He's like, oh, the governor's house bought the bourgeois slaves. And he says, yes, the slave trader. And then Jamie says to his companion, who is Haas at the moment, he says, if the governor's house has the bourgeois slaves, then we need to get to the governor's house and inquire with them. They'll probably know something about Ian being on that ship. And he looks around to see where Claire is. And when he can't spot her, we see that Claire has wandered on, watching this young woman being branded, this young slave woman being branded. And she's very disturbed by that. And she moves on. She looks sick. She moves on to an auction of some black gentleman who's standing on the auction block while this man, this slave trader, is telling the audience how virile he is, and he's going to be a good person for breeding. And someone in the audience says, well, how do we know that he's actually virile? You know, he could not be of any use, because he knew of one person who had bought a slave, and the slave was big as a moose or big as a horse, but he never produced any offspring. And the slave trader was like, okay, if you want proof, I'll give you proof. He lifts up the slave's loincloth and grabs him by the genitals, and I guess was going to make his penis erect. And Claire is mortified by this. She screams. She jumps up at the guy, hits him with her umbrella, her parasol, and starts swinging. And everybody starts fighting at this point. And the slave is looking around like, what? So, of course, you know, Claire has her, you know, white savior moment. You know, we all have to have that. You know, there's always got to be a white savior, you know, because that's what white people do in these shows. I mean, no offense. That's just how we, you know, we're used to that. That's how it happens. So anyway, Jamie comes along, of course, another white savior, and is beating everybody who's attacking Claire. And, you know, Claire says to do something. You know, when she looks at the slave that is still on the auction block, she says to Jamie, do something. You have to help him. And it makes me think, okay, why him, though? Why him out of all these other people that you saw in the cages, and the girl being branded, that didn't make you want to help her? I don't know. Anyway, we're going to whistle all past this because it's problematic as fuck. But you know what? We're not going to dwell on that. We're just going to move on, because this is a story. It's being told. And there's only so much that Claire can do. Anyway, we know that. And, you know, white saviors can only do so much. I'm being condescending, y'all. But, you know, I'm black, so expect it. Anyway, Jamie's idea of doing something was to purchase a slave. So when they're back in their lodgings, Claire is looking over her receipt, her bill of sale, of the purchase of one Negro male who whose name is Tamarine. She's not happy about this. Jamie's like, well, you told me to do it. And the only way I could do something was to appease the slave trader was to buy him. It cost 20 pounds sterling, which is a lot of money, actually. Because I think the slave trader initially was only asking for 10 pounds. So he charged them double. So anyway, Jamie told Claire that that was the only thing he could do. And Claire was like, well, we can't keep him. We've got to free him. And Jamie's like, yeah, I agree. But it's tricky to free a slave because if you release him in the wrong place at the wrong time, then somebody else can take ownership of him. You have to take him somewhere where he's actually going to be free. And Claire's like, well, we'll do that then because we can't keep him. And Jamie, you know, agrees with that because, of course, Jamie is the only liberal white man in the 18th century. So anyway... Okay, he tells Claire that they're going to go to the party, the governor's party, and Claire says, why would we do that? And he says, because the slaves from the Brujah had been bought by the governor's house, and they would probably know something about Ian. And Claire's like, well, they're not going to talk to us. And he's like, no, but they will talk to Tamarine. So then they go to Tamarine, the slave that they had just purchased, and Claire informs him that they're going to free him. She says, we are going to free you. And Tamarine is like, really? So you bought me to free me? And she says, yes, but we have to do it the right way. We don't know how to do it or where to do it. But when we do, we will free you. And then Jamie asks him, for a favor, he says, will you help us find my nephew? My nephew was kidnapped by these pirates on this ship, the Brujah. He says the slaves from the Brujah was purchased by the governor's house. And they're having a party tonight. And we would like you to escort us there and speak to some of these slaves and ask them about my nephew. My nephew was taken into slavery just as you were. And he says, will you help us? And, Tamarine nods. He says, yes, he will. So later that evening, they make it to the governor's party. And everyone is decked out in nice clothes. The clothes that they had in the trunk that had come from Lallybroch, the clothes from Paris. So luckily they had that. So they were able all to dress in nice clothes. Marcelle in her nice gown and Fergus in a nice suit. And Claire in a nice gown and Jamie in a nice suit. And Jamie even had on a powdered wig. And Yi Tin Cho, I'm not going to call this man Mr. Willoughby anymore. Yi Tin Cho had on a nice suit. And even Tamarine had on a nice suit. And Jamie says to Tamarine, make sure you find us after you learn something. And Tamarine agrees and he goes off. By the way, Tamarine is injured. He has like a limp. So, not sure what caused that, but that was something that we noticed early on, that he had some sort of issue with his leg. So anyway, Fergus, Jamie, Marcelle, and Claire, they all go to the front of the front door, and when they go to the front door, they run into Archibald Campbell. And Claire recognizes him immediately from when they were in Edinburgh. She had helped his sister and met him originally at the apothecary. And she remembers, I knew that you said that you were going to be going to the West Indies, but I'm really shocked to see you. And he's like, yes, isn't it a coincidence that we saw each other on the same island? Now, I skipped a scene in this recap because we did already establish in the show, from a scene that I had not recapped, where Archibald had was with his sister and had met with Galus at her house, and discussed that they were missing one of the sapphires that Margaret was going to need to do a prophecy. Galus was expecting Margaret to do some sort of prophecy reading so that she could find out when the king of Scotland would be returned to Scotland. And Archibald had suggested to Galas that they maybe didn't need the third stone. They only needed two. And Galas was like, no, we need three stones. That's what the prophecy says. Three sapphires in order to do the reading properly. You know, so we had already established that. I just skipped that scene. But anyway, Archibald says to Claire that his sister is doing well, because Claire had asked how she was doing. He says she's doing well. She's just around here somewhere, wandered off, you know, as she's prone to do. So Claire's like, well, then she's, you know, adjusting well to the climate. He's like, yeah, she loves it here. So Claire says, okay, well, great. It was nice seeing you. And they move on, her and Jamie. And they go into the party and they get in this line, a line that apparently is formed to greet the new governor. And Jamie says, I hate standing in these lines, but, you know, the governor would be able to, you know, help us if there's anyone that can with Ian. And so they stand there. And, oh, yes, a woman approaches and says, oh, my goodness, is he genuine? And they look at her like, what? And then they look around and notice that she's referring to Yi Tin Cho. And Jamie looks at her and it looks at Yi Tin Cho, and he just nods like it's all right. So then Jamie introduces Yi Tin Cho to this woman and says, this is Yi Tin Cho from the prominent capital of China or something like that. I think he says he makes it sound very regal as he's describing Yi Tin Cho, which I thought was nice. And then Yi Tin Cho speaks to her, says, if all of the people here are as lovely as you, then I will feel right at home. And she's just so enamored. She says, oh, my goodness, he even speaks English. So, you know, she's being, you know, extremely ridiculous. But, you know, they expect it, because I think that they wanted Yi Tin Cho to be there as some sort of distraction, so that, you know, not too much attention would be on them specifically, I guess. So whatever. Anyway, after that little bit of ridiculousness, Yi Tin Cho is he overhears a woman speaking. He looks around and sees Margaret Campbell speaking to one of the servants. One of the slaves, and by the way, there are slaves standing all around, servants, dressed in these pale uniforms and all wearing powdered wigs. And she speaks to one of them and she says, one day you will be free of your shackles and you will, you know, and she's giving basically a prophecy to him, or she's telling his fortune, saying that one day he will be free of his shackles. And the man thanks her. Thank you, miss. Thank you. And then Archibald shows up. What are you doing? Stop it. You know, he tells the man to go away. And the servant leaves. And then he says, what are you doing giving free fortunes? I told you about that. And Yi Tin Cho notices this man, Archibald, being very rough with Margaret. And he doesn't like it. And she, looking very contrite, has her head lowered. But then when she looks up, she meets eyes with Yi Tin Cho. And when they do meet eyes, he smiles at her and gives her a little nod. And she smiles back. And they have a moment. And we're like, oh, okay, so what do we have here? A little love connection here? I don't know. So that was nice. And at one point, when Margaret is outside by herself, kind of just sitting alone by the fountain, Yi Tin Cho approaches her and he says to her, your brother does not treat you like you deserve. And he takes her hand and holds it. And she's like, I think when she touches his hand, she can read him a little bit. And she says, you know, you are a very rare soul. And he says, as are you, even rarer still. And then he says something in Chinese, and she says, what does that mean? And he says, flower from heaven. So, yeah, they do have a little romantic connection there. That's kind of interesting. I like that, actually. So, anyway, in the party, Claire and Jamie are still standing in line. to see the governor. And they look over and notice, well, Claire is looking over and sees all these men, these slaves in powder wigs standing around, and she's bothered by it. And Jamie notices, Claire, and he says to Claire, so when does this end, the slave trade? And Claire says, 70 years for the British Empire and 100 years for America. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, if you say so. Now, I know that's technically speaking, y'all, because we all know, if we're honest, that slavery went on way beyond that, way beyond. Anyway, they also notice, Claire notices at one point that Marcelly and Fergus are being very playful and lovey-dovey and just handsy and touchy-feely all over each other and acting like the newlyweds that they are. And Claire smiles at them and she looks at Jamie. Do you remember when we were like that? And Jamie's like, you mean like the time when you couldn't keep your hands off of me? And Claire's like, yeah. And Jamie's like, well, yes. And but at the time we were riding a horse and you had to hold on. So that was your excuse. And they just had this moment where they just stared at each other. And it was very lusty. You could tell they had that look in their eyes like, I'm going to get some of that tonight. And once they stopped looking at each other, Jamie looks toward the front of the line again and sees the governor for the first time. And then he goes, it must be you coming through the stones. And Claire's like, what do you mean? And he says, ghosts. They've been attracted to us just like we're attracted to each other. So when we see who the governor is, it turns out to be Lord John Grey. So finally, Claimy, that's a terrible shipping name. Oh my God, that's a horrible name. Claimy. I don't like that. Jer? No. Anyway, when they get to the front of the line, Jamie bows to the governor with a smile on his face and says, Your Excellency. And Lord John is shocked and pleased and happy as hell to see Jamie. He says, Jamie, and good to see you, John. And then Jamie pulls Claire up and says, this is my wife, Claire. Lord John looks shocked to see Claire. And Claire says, John Grey? And John says, yes, I am John Grey. And, you know, Jamie lets him know that he told Claire that, you know, that he told Claire about him. And John is like, okay, we need to talk in private. So they go back to a back room. As they're on their way to the back room, we see Galus in the audience of the party, noticing them go back to the back room. So she's there. Anyway, when they get to the back office, Lord John looks like he's about to hug Jamie, but then he catches himself. And then he's like, God, it is so good to see you. And Jamie says, is Willie here? And Lord John says, no, he's not. He says, I've only been here a month myself. He says, Isabella and Willie will come after the summer when the trip is less daunting. And Jamie's like, how's he doing? And John says, oh, he's doing great. And Jamie asks if he still rides. John says, oh, yes, he's a marvelous equestrian. You taught him well. And Jamie's like, he's a good lad. I really miss him. And John says, as he does you, he kind of remembers you. And he asks about you sometimes. And Jamie's like, it's okay. It's not a big deal, as long as he's happy. And then they stare at each other for a long, awkward moment. John with love in his eyes and Jamie looking at him like, okay. and then Claire is looking at the both of them like, what the fuck? And then she jumps in with, how did you end up in Jamaica, the governor of Jamaica? And then John's like, oh, these people just, you know, keep giving me these promotions, which aren't really promotions. And I just ended up here in this dank and hot place, you know. And he makes it pretty clear that that he's an officer, but he's not treated the way that he should be treated in the military. And Claire, being a smart woman, can probably guess why that is, since she's already probably interpreted his feelings for Jamie through the way he's been acting and looking. So that would make him gay, and gay in the military in the 18th century, yeah, not a good look. So we can guess why he's being put in all these difficult posts that he would, that no one would ever want. So anyway, then Jamie notices this leather strip that he has hanging from his pocket. It's got embroidery on it and a large blue stone. And Jamie's like, "Is that?" And Lord John looks down and he goes, "Oh yes, the sapphire that you gave me at Ardsmuir." He says, "Yeah, I keep it to," and then he pauses, he looks at Claire, then back at Jamie. He says, "To remind me of our friendship." We know what it really is though, right? It's like, what is it like? Is it like a promise ring or like a love charm? So it's, oh my goodness, poor John. Anyway, Jamie looks a bit uncomfortable, but you know, he just nods. So then Lord John is like, "Okay, well, I need to get back to my party guests, but it was really great seeing you again," you know. And he nods to both of them and they bow to him and he leaves. And then Claire and Jamie kind of look at each other and then they just kind of have this awkward silent moment. So then when they leave the party, the back room, I think they're approached by the gentleman that they had seen earlier, who was the one that was the one that found them lodgings and told them about the party, and who was the employee of Jamie's cousin. And he said that he had found a Freemason who knows a lot of people in Jamaica and would probably be able to give them some answers that they needed about their nephew. And Jamie says that he was going to go talk to them, and Claire said she'd stay and talk to the party guests. So when Claire was kind of, you know, hanging out by herself, she's approached by Lord John. And Lord John, you know, says, "So Jamie told you everything about, you know, Willie and all that." And she says, "Yes, and his wife, who is your wife's sister." Not his wife, his Willie's mother. And she says, "And Willie's mother happens to be your wife's sister." And Lord John was surprised that she knew all of this. And he's like, "Wow, he really did tell you a lot." And she says, "Yeah." And so Claire says, "So Jamie gave you that sapphire?" And Lord John says, "Yes, he did." And he says, "Well, actually, he surrendered it to me because he had, you know, escaped and gone to Silky Island to find it, where he, you know, went thinking that you were there. And he thought you had come back to him. And look, now you actually have." And Claire raises her chin and she goes, "Yeah, I have." And Lord John can hear the hint in that claim, because she wants him to know, because she can tell this man has eyes for her husband. So he catches that, and he says, "It's good to meet the woman finally who has been Jamie's every heartbeat." And she smiles, acknowledging that. And when she turns her head, she looks and sees Galus walking across the room on the other end of the room. And she's exiting the room, and Claire is shocked to see her. And she says, "I'm sorry, Lord John, you'll have to excuse me. I think I've seen a ghost." And then she leaves to follow Galus. And when she goes outside where she feels Gillis has gone, she doesn't see her. She's looking around. Then she hears behind her of all the gin joints and all the towns and all the world, which is, of course, a famous Humphrey Bogart line. Nobody in this time would know that, but Gillis, of course, being from the 60s, would. So Claire turns around and sees Gillis standing there. And Claire says, "I thought you were dead." And Gillis like, "Yeah, you thought I was burned in the pyre." So Gillis begins to proceed to tell Claire all about the story of her having the Baron, not being burned because she was pregnant and the child was innocent. So they let her stay in a thieves' hole for 3 months until she was ready to give birth. And then they let her have the baby in her own bed. And Dougal comes along and takes the baby, not wanting anybody to know that the baby was his. She says something about how you can lead men around by the cock because they're such fools. And if you have a baron for them, you can use the baron to lead them around, you know, because they're so easily led around. But she said, no matter what, it's still that you're nothing but a cunt to them. She says, whether you're going in or whether they're coming out, you're just nothing but a cunt. So Gillis has some very strong opinions about men. And she doesn't have any motherly, matronly feelings about her child either, because she referred to him as a rattling. And she said that Dougal found a good home for him, you know, and hid her. He helped her escape and hid her away. And she hid out for a while. But then when she found out that Dougal had died at Culloden, that she decided to marry this sugar plantation owner. And that's how she ended up in Jamaica, and said that, you know, the British man, you know, did not belong in the Jamaican environment. You know, the least little thing can take them away. So he died years ago. So we know she poisoned him, though, right? We do. But just like with her first husband, because that's how she makes her money. You know, she marries a rich man and then eventually kills him off. And then she's a rich widow. So now she's Mistress Abernathy of the Rose Plantation or whatever. So she knows that is her title now. And when Claire hears the Abernathy name, she goes, oh, well, she has heard about this Abernathy person. So she did not realize that it was Gillis until that moment. So Claire then tells her Gillis asks her why she's in Jamaica. And Claire says that she's there with Jamie to try to find Jamie's nephew Ian, because Ian had been captured. Of course, Gillis knows all this already, but she's pretending that she doesn't. She's like, oh, how awful. What can I do to help? And Claire says, well, you know a lot of people. You know, maybe you can ask around. And Gillis promises she would do that. And Gillis like, well, let's, and Gillis looks at Claire's necklace and says, is that a black opal and or a black coral? And Claire says, yes, Jamie gave it to me. And Gillis was like, well, let's go say hello to your young fox cub. You know, maybe he'll have a bauble for me as well. Of course, she's referring to the sapphire. So when they go back into the party, you know, Lord John and Jamie are having a nice chat. And Claire shows up and says, look who I found. And when Jamie sees Gillis, he looks surprised. And Gillis is like, you know, Gillis says hello and Jamie says hello back. And then Claire says, and do you know the governor, John Gray? And Gillis like, well, yes, we met earlier. And then she bows to him. And when she bows, she notices his sapphire on his strip. And she grabs it and she's like, well, where did you get this lovely jewel? And Lord John has to snatch it from her almost. And he says, well, isn't this just the attention grabby? I should wear it more often. And he tells her how, you know, someone found it on an island off the coast of Scotland and gave it to him. And Jamie was like, you mean confiscated to you by a prisoner? And the man was like, oh, well, and John was like, well, you know, I leave that part out. So Gillis was like, yeah, that's very interesting. Excuse me for a moment. She leaves because she's ready, you know, to take action now. Lord John looks after her, says she's very strange. When she finds Archibald Campbell in the party, she says, look, tell Margaret that we need her to do some readings for the party. And the man was like, well, I didn't know she was going to be needing to do that. And Gillis was like, yes, she will. You know, so get her ready so she can do some readings for the party. So they get Margaret to start doing readings for the party guests. As she's doing this, Gillis spots the governor and says, governor, why don't you get your palm read as well? And he's like, nah, I don't believe none of that. And she's like, well, come on, you know, you owe it to your party guest. You're the host here. You have to do what we tell you. You know, and the party guests, you know, start clapping, going, yeah, do a reading. So he goes, okay, fine. So she and Gillis takes him over to Margaret and says, you'll have to give her something of yours to hold. And she looks down at his strip with the sapphire on it. And he's hesitant at first, but then he takes it off and he gives it to Margaret. As soon as Margaret holds it, she gets this look on her face. And then she starts to recite the prophecy. The prophecy is essentially something about when the woman's curse and the man's attack happens, after 1200 something, 1200 moons have passed. Only then will the King of Scotland return to the throne. I wish I knew the words specifically. I do, actually. I did. When I did my original review, I did do the exact words, but I don't remember them now. But this is essentially what it was. So after she's done with the reading, the governor was looking at her all strange, and he takes his sapphire back. And as soon as he takes it, she comes out of a trance. And he stands up and he goes, well, isn't that interesting? Or that was unusual. What an unusual pastime. You know, he's just trying to crack a joke to lighten the mood, because everybody at this point, because she had sounded really creepy when she said the prophecy, everybody was staring at her and really quiet. So he broke the ice with that joke and they laughed. And as soon as he moves away, Gillis grabs Archibald and they leave the party. They go outside. So then they're outside trying to figure out what does the prophecy mean? What does it mean, these words? So Archibald says, well, no, Gillis says, I know the 1200 moons is 200 years. But what does the other stuff mean? And Archibald says, well, a woman's curse is childbirth, and the man's attack is him planting his seed. And there was something else. The deal or the deed or something. And he said, that is the child, the result of the giving birth and planting of the seed. And there would be a baby born. So there's a child. Then he just kind of comes to the conclusion that it all means that a child who is 200 years old at birth will have to die in order for the King of Scotland to return to the throne. So that was his interpretation. So Gillis is like, a 200-year-old baby, really? And he's like, well, that's what the prophecy says. And she's like, do you think I'm an idiot? And then she goes, okay, all right, I'm not going to overreact. Just because it's cryptic does not mean we can't figure it out. Obviously, there's more meaning to it than we are understanding right now. So they just figure that they'll, you know, recall what it is later. She says, but for right now, we're leaving this party. She says, go get your sister. We're out of here. So, you know, they're going to leave. I think at this point we see Fergus and Marcelly. They're outside as well. They're still, you know, being newlyweds, you know, giggling, tee-heeing all over each other. And and they're kissing and, you know, they're making out. And then they see where some soldiers pull up in front of the mansion. And one of the soldiers, one of the men that gets off a horse, is Captain Leonard. And when Fergus sees him, he's like, oh, we have to warn Jamie. So they go back into the party and Fergus informs Jamie that Captain Leonard had just arrived. So they know that they got to go now. And as they are leaving the party, they run into Tamaraine. And Tamaraine tells them that the slaves that he had spoken to did say that they saw a white boy with yellow hair who had gone and been taken by Mistress Abernathy to Rose Palace. And Claire's like, oh my God, that's Galus's house. She lied to me. So Jamie's like, I told you she was evil. So they say, okay, great. And Tamaraine was like, we still have our deal, right? And you're going to free me. And they were like, oh, of course. But we have to do it at the right time. And Tamaraine was like, well, this is the right time. This is the place. I know of some people that are in the mountains near the Abernathy estate that they're free there. So they're like, well, where is this? And Tamaraine's like, I will show you. So they get into the carriage. Everyone gets into the carriage and leave. As they're leaving, though, we see that Captain Leonard comes out of the mansion and notices the carriage as it is pulling off. So I don't know if he had spotted them or not, apparently. But he's looking after them as they drive off. So they're driving through the jungle at night. It's very dark. Tamaraine, after a while, tells him to stop. And he spots a tree with a mark on it. He says, that's the tree. That's the mark. So he gets out of the carriage. And he says, this is where I'm supposed to get off at. There's a path that leads to where I'm supposed to go. So Jamie and Claire say goodbye to him. They tell him to be well, Godspeed, all that stuff. So Tamaraine leaves. And then Jamie's like, okay, we need to get to Rose Garden and get to Ian, to Rose Palace and get to Ian. But just as they're talking, the soldiers pull up, the redcoats. And Captain Leonard is one of them. And he says to Claire, well, Mistress Claire, I see that you found your husband. So some of the redcoats take Jamie by the arms. Captain Leonard reads charges. He says, James Fraser, also known as Alexander Malcolm, you are hereby under arrest and charged with murder of some that incisement man, and also of distributing libel sedition, printing libel sedition papers. So Claire is pissed and she's like, you bastard. She says, I helped you. She's like, you wouldn't even be alive if it weren't for me. And Captain Leonard looks a little bit, you know, moved, I guess, on some level by that. But he gets over it very quickly and tell them to take Jamie away. And Claire is left standing there by the carriage as they're dragging Jamie off. And Jamie yells at her, find Ian, Claire, find Ian. Oh, yeah. And before the soldiers had even taken them, he had given her his pictures. And he said, take these for safekeeping. You know, the pictures that he had of Brianna and the one little portrait of Willie. So he had given them to her before he was even captured. So as they're dragging him off and he's yelling at her to find Ian, Claire is staring off at him, upset and, you know, bewildered. And that was the end of the episode. So that's it. That is the end of the Bacra. And I enjoyed the episode. It was very, very good. I enjoyed how they reintroduced Galus to us in that very dramatic way in the bloodbath. Very different from what happens in the book. Okay, I'm going to do a few book comparisons, guys. So if you don't like those, this is where you would want to cut it off. In the book, Galus's return is not nearly as impressive. I'm trying to remember, how did Galus return in the book? How did she return? How did Claire see Galus again? Oh my goodness. I can't believe I forgot. But anyway, however it happened, when Claire saw Galus for the first time, Galus was not the same woman that Claire once knew. Galus was probably a good 180 to 200 pounds and had terrible skin and looked unwell, looked like she had a horrible diet, and I think she had bad teeth, and she just looked terrible. Galus was fat and ugly, and she had changed quite a bit from when Claire knew her before. Galus also, even though in this episode we can kind of tell that Galus is maybe a little Looney Tunes, in the book, it is much clearer that she is not all there. She is quite an interesting character. Let's see, what else is different from the book? I love the way that they handled the whole Yi-Ting Cho thing, because something very different happens in the book with Yi-Ting Cho at the governor's party. There is no connection with Margaret Campbell or anything like that. There is Yi-Ting Cho, you know, flirting with women and you know, being interested in women's feet and them being kind of freaked out about it, I think. And then at one point, a whole terrible thing happens with Claire going into the bathroom or going into an area, powder room or whatever, and then noticing a dead body in there. And the body had been, I think throat had been cut or whatever. And it was the woman that had been talking to Mr. Willoughby or Yi-Ting Cho earlier. And it was determined by the people who did an investigation that possibly Yi-Ting Cho had killed the woman because he was interested in her and she had rebuffed his advances and he was upset and had killed her. So, yeah, that was what happens in the book. Thankfully, that is not the route they decided to go in the show. Now, the way that they handle the slaves market, the slave trade market, there's only so much you can do with that. I mean, no matter what, that's going to be an upsetting thing to have to try and portray. That is something, and I think I discussed this earlier when I first started doing this podcast. I was like, you know, there were certain people that were thinking, oh, it was just too much. Was it really that bad back then? Was it really, they were talking about, you know, the misogyny, you know. Because I in my earlier shows, I was talking about how I had listened to other shows and how some of the, shows hosts were talking about misogyny and how, was it really that bad in the 18th century, or was it really that bad in Claire's time in the early 1940s? Was misogyny really that bad? Yes, it was. It was that bad. It was worse. You know, so, and I was like, if y'all are upset by that, how are you going to act when they cover the slave trade, which is going to be part of this story, a big part, which it wasn't a huge part. I mean, they did put it in the story, but, you know, it was kind of, you know, it was there because it had to be. You know, they can't pretend like this isn't going to be part of the story. Of course, it's got to be part of it. So I think they portrayed it as well as it could be portrayed. Okay. And the people in the cages, the woman getting branded, the man being auctioned. I thought they were being very careful with the language, to be honest with you, because, you know, they weren't calling them Negroes. You know, they weren't. You know, it was niggas. You know, they was calling them niggas. You know, they were. That's what they were called. And that's what they were referred to as. But to say Negroes, you know, was the politically correct way to say it and isn't as offensive. So, of course, the slave trader who is trading people refers to them as Negroes. You know, come on. That's not what they really would have referred to them as. That wasn't really genuine, I didn't think. And to have Jamie be so liberal in this time that he's grown up in the 18th century, I mean, I can appreciate it and I understand probably there were people like that back then, maybe. But I think the average person back then, and, you know, Jamie is what I like about how they portray Jamie as this enlightened person who can be with a woman who's from the future and accept it and understand that this is something that he doesn't truly understand, but he's willing to accept it anyway. I think only that type of person, I guess, could be the kind of person who would not appreciate or not like slavery or accept slavery. Everybody else, though, does. And I don't think it would have been, even though Jamie asks Claire when it's going to end. And obviously his talking to Tamaraine and talking to him as a person and not as a slave or as a Negro. I appreciated that, but I thought that, and I even thought this in the book when I read it in the book, because Jamie was pretty much this way in the book as well, you know, very enlightened and liberal in the book as well when it came to slavery. I just thought it would have been more realistic if they made Jamie more obtuse when it came to slavery. And yes, it would have made everybody go, oh no, Jamie, don't, you know, but it would have been more realistic to me. I think because he was from that time, y'all. I mean, it's just realistic. He is an 18th century Scotsman who is white and who was brought up to believe and that everyone who is white is superior to everyone else. That is just what they believe. That is just how it was. And for him to speak to Tamaraine as an equal and to treat him as such and be respectful is, to me, a bit on the unrealistic side. That's just me. And this is me speaking about this as a black person. And you'd probably go, well, wouldn't you want to see him be respected? Yeah, it would be nice if it was genuine, if it was realistic, but it's not. That's my point. My point is that it's not realistic. That's just not how it was. People of color back then were treated horribly. That's the reality. And to portray it in a TV show the way that it was is just portraying reality. And it's being realistic. Portraying it as some sort of a kumbaya experience is not realistic. That's fantasy. That's not how it was. And we know that. You know? But I digress. We're going to whistle past this. You know, I'm not going to dwell on it. I just had to get that out, that if I had any problems at all with this episode, which I enjoyed the episode thoroughly, if I had any issues with it, it was just that part was just not all that authentic. It wasn't. But it was as authentic and handled as well as I think they could have handled it. Without making the episode about the slave trade. Because if they have gotten a little bit too into that, then the episode would have been about the slave trade. It would have been about slavery. And that would have overwhelmed the plot of the story of the show. And you don't want to do that. This is not a show about slavery. This is a show about Outlander, about Claire, Jamie. And in this episode, the point was to find Ian and to get information about Ian. It was not about slavery. If we had gotten a little bit too heavy with the slave stuff, then it would have taken us out of that. And I understand that they couldn't do that. So that's why it's not a problem for me, really. But just know that we do understand that was just not authentic. All right. That is it for me. I am going to end it right here. Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode of Bannocks, Bonnets, and Kilts. Next week, we are going to be on the last episode of Outlander, and that episode is going to be Eye of the Storm. And I will be here with bells on, and hopefully we won't have any problems or any re-recordings or anything like that for that episode. So thanks again for tuning in, guys. You have a great week or great rest of your week, and I will catch you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.